Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening here in Lexington, Kentucky, where I'm broadcasting from for episode number 395. And joining me tonight is the wonderful, vivacious, and loquacious Holly Marie Phillippe. Holly, there you are.
I am here.
She is here. Made it in the nick of time, folks. But we're going to have a great show for you tonight. It's going to be a good one. I have a guest that was on not so long ago, but tonight's a completely different topic. So it's going to be a good one, and I hope you all get a lot out of it. It's going to be a great discussion. Looking forward to it. And Holly actually had some pretty heavy involvement in some of the projects we're talking on tonight. And before that, though, of course, we're going to give you some Imaginarium news because, of course, this podcast is affiliated with the Imaginarium Convention, so we've got some news updates, and we are going to give our listeners a bit of a scoop tonight. So yes, we're going to give you some news, and we're also going to give you a little bit that's coming out tomorrow, in fact. Just thought I'd have a little fun with that. But first, we do have some new panelists that have been announced for the convention, and joining us for 2024's panelists are author-editor Christina Barber, editor Theodora Bryant, panelist William Bove, and last but not least, author and cosplayer Clayton Barnett. Yes, longtime listener of the show as well, I might add. But yeah, we got several great new panelists that have been announced since last show. And then we also today just announced one of the original Dragonlance series authors and just a brilliant individual who we just love. And that's author and poet Michael Williams. And he has been announced today as a spotlighted guest. So, yes, we had four new panelists and one new spotlighted guest to announce for you. And if that's not enough, we're going to give you a little bit of a scoop tonight because just didn't have the space to get this announced properly today. So look for it tomorrow in full detail. But, yes, we added some new panels and workshops. We had one new panel and several new workshops. And the new panel that has been added is Defining Different Genres of Writing. As yet has not been declared, a moderator has not been declared yet for that panel, but Defining Different Genres of Writing, that should be a really cool discussion, especially when it gets to subgenres and things like, you know, discussing, you know, in area science fiction and space opera and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be really interesting, I think. That's one you don't want to miss. And so then we're going to go over to workshops real quick and give you a quick preview of some new ones that are being added. There are a total of six new workshops, and just with one of the people I just mentioned, as a matter of fact, Theodora Bryant is going to be presenting Never Let the Readers See Your Words. And that's a very provocative title. And it's for new authors. It's a way to get the hints and no-nos in a fun way that show you the errors you're making before you submit your manuscript to agents or publishers. And Theodora has had over 30 years of editing experience. She's going to be a fantastic presenter. And then we also have S. Cinders doing marketing and ads on a shoestring budget. So that's going to be another presentation. It'll be 60 minutes long. And then we have two from Maddie James. I'm thrilled to have Maddie coming back this year. It's been a few years since we've seen Maddie at the convention, but she is back next summer and presenting two workshops. One is discovering your right path to publishing success. And that right in that title is spelled W-R-I-T-E, discovering your right path to publishing success. And the other workshop she's presenting is Plot Like a Pantser. And that's going to be a fun one, I think, for sure. And then Paige Zaplandam is going to be doing a workshop called What's the Point? And talking about how every chapter has to have a point with in terms of the placement and what's in it content-wise. It's going to be a good, as far as organizing chapters. And then last but not least, we have William Bove, who I also just announced as a panelist, who's going to be presenting the Renaissance of the New Gothic Romance Period, Romantic Period, sorry. Yeah. The Renaissance of the New Gothic Romantic Period. I know that one's right up Holly's alley. So, yeah, Holly, you want to give some comments on the new programming?
Makes my little black heart happy. I want to tell him about this. Mr. William Bove,
sure.
It's going to be his first year of being at Imaginarium. He teaches meditation. He's also a palm reader, and he's also an author of Gothic horror. And this panel with the beautiful title is going to discuss the rebirth and resurgence of Gothic horror, vampires, and horror. So it's going to be a celebration of horror, terror, and romanticism. So, yeah, that's going to be cool.
That is going to be awesome.
You know, something really different that I've never got to add, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this sounds really cool.
Yeah, well, we're getting a lot out early this year far as the programming. I mean, it's coming together. And, yeah, if you haven't browsed that page, there is quite a bit on it right now, panels and workshop page. And this official announcement what's that?
It covers meat and bones of writing. It covers, you know, I've got marketing covered so far, different genres covered.
Ones.
I mean, yeah, it's phenomenal so far. You know, I think what I've thrown up there. And I've got a lot more in the works, guys, so keep your eye out.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of panels being added very soon. But the workshops are really coming along. And, again, tomorrow we should have all six of these with their full descriptions and presenters listed on the site of these workshops and the new panel. So that will be added to the main site and announced. So definitely check that out and everything else if you haven't already. Because, it's building up really nicely and quite a bit of cool stuff, and Holly's working hard at it, and just to give you a little scoop, we can't give too much details, so there's more of a teaser, but we pretty much got a full confirmation on one Imaginator, and we're close to getting a confirmation on a second Imaginator guest. We have two major guests for next year that hopefully it's just a day-to-day thing. I mean, any day now, I mean, we should get the final confirmation on one, and then the second one should be, within a couple of days or so, hopefully, and because we're going to try to make sure that both get announced a little bit before Christmas for sure. So, but yeah, two really, really good Imaginator guests, which I'm aching to tell you who they are, but we just have to wait just a little bit longer just to make sure that it's definitely confirmed before we talk about it publicly. And then we're working on some major guest of honor folks right now, but yeah, two Imaginators should be right around the corner, and one of them may be, could be confirmed as early as beginning of next week. I think it's just how Holly's just waiting on a final confirmation from one, and it's going to be really good. Two Imaginators listed and hot on the trail of our a couple guests of honor candidates. And it's always an adventure. You want to pick somebody that really makes you go, wow, we want to be here. So that's always the quest. We're looking at the chat room. It's open. If you have any trouble logging in, be sure to refresh. And we've got Carol Prefladish, award-winning author and screenwriter. And, of course, the great author Kenzie Michaels is in there. And Sandy Lender, the genre blender, award-winning author and poet and editor and fly hunter. I loved. Yeah, Sandy gave me a good laugh today with her Twitter post. Yeah, she's evidently is being stalked and harassed by a fly. Yes, an actual fly. And so I had suggested to her to use the chopstick technique that Mr. Miyagi demonstrated in The Karate Kid to get rid of this fly. So hopefully Sandy used that to success. I also posted a nice GIF with an oversized fly swatter as a second option for Sandy to use. So hopefully, I gave Sandy some good advice and helped her with this fly battle. it was a great Twitter post, or X, I should say, X post. But I don't know if Holly, I don't think you were on Twitter, so I don't know if you saw Sandy's fly battles today.
No, not much. I'm on there, but I mean, I'm not, constant with it. I'm more constant with my LinkedIn and Facebook. Yeah. I have Instagram. I haven't touched TikTok except for like videos that the grandkids or something sent me that I watched. That's Imaginarium. I kind of got away from it. I need to get back on it and put some stuff up there because I was doing really good. I got over 1,000 followers and got, enough to do the lives and stuff, but how far there's just been, I've been so sick this year and just one thing after another, and it's just been insane.
Well, that's a good one because you should chime in on that post by Sandy. It's a fly of supernatural abilities, evidently, in terms of evading defeat and longevity. It evidently has an amazing lifespan as well. So it's an unnatural fly. But I loved it. It just cracked me up.
Well, you talk about unnatural fly. I have this weird thing going on in my eyeball, and they have to watch my eyes anyway because of my ocular pressure being high and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I have these weird bigger floaters that were new, and I had to go in and get them looked at. Well, me and Steve are sitting there today, and dogs, even out in public, cats love me too, but, we're cat people too, but I'm also – dog people. I love all animals. It doesn't matter. I got squirrels. I got everything. And so dogs will randomly come up to me if, like, we're out in the park or Steve can verify or, somebody's walking their dog along the sidewalk. The dog will pull the leash and try to come to me, and they just do. Well, we're sitting there, and they have an office dog, and I guess now, first time I'd ever met him, and here he come. He'd walk right exactly to me, and we were sitting against the wall. He walks right over to me, sits down, and then I sit there and rubbed on him for I know a good 15 minutes. Steve, he walked right over to it's just the coolest thing because fur people, fur babies know fur people. They just know empaths, and they know people that love animals, and it's just neat to watch them because they pick up on that, and it was just so cool. He just walked right over. And I'm like, oh, you're such a sweet baby. And then he did it to you,
no.
Steve, a little bit after that.
Yeah, he did. He did. But, yes, I don't want to run too close to our guests. I've got to get into those that brought you tonight's show.
Go ahead.
And Sandy Blender, the genre blender. I got tongue-tied a little bit there. And is to bring you tonight's show, as well as the amazing Ren Garcia. And as far as Sandy goes, yes, make good choices this Christmas season. And help Sandy get the funds to get some fly defense materials so she can deal with this menace that she has been plagued with evidently this week. But here's a little bit from Sandy. Here we go.
Give someone you love the gift of adventure for Christmas. Help them escape reality with an epic fantasy dragon girl power sword and sorcery saga that thrills and entertains. Send your loved ones to Unveiled for the holidays with a novel from author Sandy Lender. Visit Sandy's author page on Amazon or her website at authorsandylender.com and make it a fantastic Christmas.
Yes, make good choices, folks. Make good choices and help Sandy get those fly killing materials that she badly needs this week, evidently.
Oh, oh, oh.
Buy, yeah, go out and buy the whole Choices trilogy. Help her out. All right, so we're going to go over to Bren Garcia and give you a little bit from him with the famous question at the end.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Bren Garcia. Absolutely weird enough for you. And yes, you better confirm with us that you're going to come see us in person next summer, because we love you. Definitely hope you're having a great holiday season. I know he listens, so yes, we got to keep nudging him to come on next summer. And I was checking out to see if we got our guest on deck. Has not called in just yet, but I will check on that really quick. I'm looking. Yeah, Sandy's having adventures, evidently. She is talking right about the chat room is great, folks. You got to get in there. And was just joined by Moon. Dewan Hearn just joined in chat. And, yeah, she had an encounter with some otters, evidently, Holly.
Otters? Oh, man. They're the sweetest babies.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so sweet. You could swim with them. They love to play. If you get them like little toy balls and stuff, they absolutely love it. Rocks, they like shiny rocks that they can play with. They're just the cutest thing.
They are. And I guess Sandy had a bunch of them dive into a pond and they swam over to her and begged for food.
Aww.
But she had no food, so she's going to have to carry some otter food in the future, which probably isn't too hard. She just carries some cans of sardines, probably would work.
Uh-uh.
It's just a workaround, and it wouldn't get too messy to carry. I don't know. So, but yes, our guest just called in, and so I'm going to go ahead right into the introduction so we get him right to you. And he is one of Holly and my favorite people in the world and was on the show not too long ago talking about his debut novel, the cross-genre story, The Gaze of Ganesh. And he is an author and who also has a great series of children's books called Dr. Vic's Books for Kids. And by now you know who he is. He is the one, the only, Victor Enocker. Victor, welcome to the show.
Yay!
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Hey, Vic.
And we're having you back, and you're going to be talking about a completely different genre and topic because we're right sitting on top of the release of two brand new titles in your children's book series, and so we're definitely going to talk about those. We had you on not just a little over about 3 months ago, I think it was, to talk about The Gaze of Ganesh. And before we get into the new books, since we've last met with you, how's the feedback been going for that? How is the good news as far as the readers? What's been hearing?
Pretty good stuff. A lot of people actually telling me that they a lot of times they were trying to stop. You know, when they would run out of time, that they're allotted time to read, and they're like, I couldn't put it down. They're like, I had to keep reading because there was so much action in the book. So that was
Well, that is a good problem to have.
Yep.
That is awesome.
Oh, there is. There's so much that goes on, and you know, your lead-ins, you know, and so people are going to be like, oh, man, yeah, I could definitely see that. I could see that was going to be a good problem.
Mm-hmm.
When I was editing, yeah, I could see that coming.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. So much fun to edit.
And
I think
speaking
of
a lot of people. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Vic.
I guess a lot of people thought the book was more timid than they imagined. Like, they didn't realize there's murder and there was sex and there's all kinds of stuff that happens during the book. So I think that surprised a lot of people. Nothing in too intricate details, but there were adult themes. We'll just say there were adult themes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so more extras than they were expecting. That's good.
Know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's it. And it's not a YA book. It is definitely a mature, an adult book, mm-hmm. you know. And you touched on cultural issues and racial issues and different things that's going on, like sex trafficking and things mm-hmm. like that in there too, you know, of our time. So, yeah, it's very informative also.
Right. Yeah, good stuff, man. Great, great book. But tonight we're celebrating two new children's book releases, and the team for these included Holly as editor, and so she, of course she and Vic are quite the tandem when it comes to writer editor here, and we have two different illustrators. Vic, this is Vic's third and fourth children's books, and one is called How Kids Can Help Feed Other Hungry Kids, and that has illustrations by Kevin Hamilton. And then the other book that is should be going live any moment now on Amazon is Real Men Don't Need Big Muscles, Explaining Masculinity, and it has illustrations by Chloe Elizabeth Green. So not just one, but two titles with two different illustrators. And so, yeah, Holly, do you want to begin the discussion of the realm of children's books and Vic's new ones?
Well, again, it's very informative. And it's something for all different age groups, I believe. They can actually, you could get this for a younger sibling that could pass it down to, you know, a future sibling that could pass. It'll stand, these books will stand the test of time, put it that way. I'm a firm believer of that. And I think with the food one especially, that's a big topic that needs touched on. Because that also teaches children to be humble, to be thankful for what they have, you know, not to waste food if you have, you know, an overabundance, not to waste, because there's people that don't have it, to appreciate what you do have.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, Vic, tell us a little bit about your – we'll start with since Holly's talking about that one, and I also agree with Holly. I think it tackles a very difficult subject very well for a young reader in the way you wrote it. But what was your inspiration for making this one of your early titles in your series, How Kids Can Help Feed Other Hungry Kids, and, you know, how did you approach a topic that's this expensive and can be pretty daunting, for a 32-page children's book.
Basically, a lot of the reasons I think the world is in the state that it's in right now is because I feel like people feel helpless. I think we would have as many, internet trolls and people who are just prejudiced and racist if they could actually spend their time constructively. And I just wanted to start early with kids and, everybody knows about food insecurity. It's been around forever, probably since the beginning of time. And that
right.
What I try to touch on with the book was that, I guess we all think that we would be able to visualize someone who would be food insecure or be hungry. But, you know, back when I was a kid, and I'm Indian American, everyone, you know, people's parents would say, people are starving in India. People are starving in India, you know, if you didn't finish eating. And they'd be like, people are starving
right.
here. People are starving in Kentucky and Appalachia, in the United States, you know. And I wanted to touch on that to be like, you know, it's actually a local problem.
That's true. Mm-hmm. It's not just a worldwide. It is quite local. I mean, it goes along hand in hand with the homeless problem also. And
mm-hmm.
even here in Lexington, we don't have a huge homeless population, but we've got enough and hunger problems. And we have children that are hungry, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's everywhere. That's why I appreciate now that the schools are doing mm-hmm. like the summer programs where they're still handing out lunches, because sometimes that's all these children get as far as a warm meal a day is their school lunch. And so when school's mm-hmm. not in, they're not even getting one more meal a day. And most people don't even think about this because, well, we eat whatever. We're hungry, we go get something out of the kitchen. You know, we don't even think about it. It's just there. But there are so many that, you know, it's a day-to-day struggle. And I love that the way you write these, it's in a tone that children will understand, you know, and it gives them some power for them to be able to do something to help. You know, not just think, oh, only the adults can help. No, you can help too. You know, the kids can also contribute.
Exactly. And just while I've got a moment on the podcast here, there's a text, a number you can text in the summer that will help kids find where meals are available locally. And that number is, it's just 877-877. You can text that in the summer, and that'll help you find places where if you need meals, or if you know a kid that might need a meal in the summer when school lunch is not available, you can text that number. That's 877-877.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow, is that nationwide or just local?
No, it's nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 877-877.
Yes.
Yeah, he has a whole page on that particular number and text information in the book. It's page 20, as a matter of fact. It's he's got a whole page dedicated to that. He's got another page that also spells out some organizations, volunteer organizations that are online, some of the bigger ones that are, you know, vetted and reputable. He's also got a page dedicated to that. It's one of the pages. And you mentioned the homeless, and he also has pages in this book dedicated exactly to that. Yeah, homeless individuals who are food insecure. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, he covers it, I mean, in this book. And like you said, I mean, I found, you know, like I said, I wasn't the writer or the editor, and so I'm looking at it from the outside perspective, reading it. And it was, to me, it translates very well to children, the way he wrote it. And, of course, the illustrations don't hurt. I mean, they are lovely full-color illustrations with real stylized kind of border style. And,
yeah.
And it's really, really well done by
children.
Kevin Hamilton.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely geared toward children. Really colorful,
yep.
Very... very, very good illustrations. And what was it like, the process of working with Kevin on this? Because, I mean, they go perfectly with the text. All the illustrations
do. Kevin is a phenomenal artist. He's also a tattoo artist. So I think, like, what I always try to do when I write these books is I try to not actually influence the illustrator. You know, I try to just let them see the material and come up with, you know, what they feel like and give them more creative control. And, I mean, he was amazing. I don't think we had any corrections. I don't think there was anything to change. He ran with it. He's phenomenal. He's an amazing artist. And, you know,
so
some of the things, it looks easy after they illustrate, but, you know, when you just, someone, you know, this is what it's going to say on this page, and you just have to come up with it, you know, without any, you know, just on your own, it's, you know, it's harder to do than you would think. And he makes it, I mean, he's just a phenomenal artist. He makes it look easy. He really makes it look easy.
Yeah, and some of these are not easy images to address because, I mean, like some of them, one of them talks about food waste. It's a page talking about, you know, how much food is thrown away. How do you do that in a children's book image, you know, and one of the ones on landfills. How do you do that in a children's book, you know, that being too ominous? And he does. I mean, he actually does the artwork in a way that fits perfectly with what's being talked about, fits perfectly, but it's in a way that, you know, is definitely not going to, you know, overwhelm a younger reader, a child. It's really, that's what I think is impressive is, the writing and the illustrations dealing with a topic like this, and it manages to, you know, walk that very fine line, make it translate right without being overwhelming or you know, upsetting.
Yeah,
I should say.
Overwhelming, upsetting, yeah. But still, yeah, they can feel empowered that they can help. Like, they don't want to give up. You know, you're like, oh, what am I going to do? Well, you can do this.
Yeah.
But,
A lot of suggestions. Gardening, too. You even had a panel on this on gardening. which I thought was awesome.
Yep.
Definitely at Holly's alley. She
yep,
doesn't mind that. But it's a
yeah, and there were two
really,
ways, you know. I was saying with gardening, it's like the kids could grow, you know, grow a garden and you could donate the food, or you could take the food and sell it, say at like a farmer's market, and then donate the money. So there were like, mm-hmm. there were plenty of things kids could do to help. And
yeah,
what I never realized is like when we were kids, they always, you know, we knew that there was, you know, starvation and things. We just didn't think there was enough food being grown or available. And what's happened now is like there is enough food. It's just so much of it is wasted. And if we took that
right.
food, you know, there's always going to be waste, but a lot of that food, if you didn't waste it, would actually, you could easily cover the people who are starving and hungry just with the waste that we have, which is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've got some hard data that's kind of sprinkled out through this book as well. Addresses just that. I think it was something like a, oh yeah, it's like, I think the one factoid you had that was, or fact piece that you had in here was that if we reduced our waste of food by 30%, you could feed all the hungry people in America. That's a sobering
mm-hmm.
stat. And I think it was 100
yeah,
billion pounds of food are thrown away every year. 100 billion
yeah.
with a B.
Billion, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
then
yeah, from
yeah,
that waste, all the methane that gets made off of that
mm-hmm.
food waste, 25% of methane emissions are from food waste.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that's global
yeah, then,
warming.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The first page gets your attention. I mean, because you have a stat in here that about 1 in 6 American children, you know, and you typically think of, you know, America as, you know, a prosperous nation in general, but 1 in 6 American children are considered food insecure as far as the households they're in. That's a pretty sobering statistic too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1 in 6. You know, it's about 50 million people living in food insecure households as of now and today. Yeah, so, I mean, right from the get-go, yeah, there's some pretty sobering statistics. And I mean, you've got everything about food banks and volunteering to organizations that they can, you know, be a part of or help with fundraisers, coupons. You can talk about coupons and about imperfect produce and,
mm-hmm.
you know, being able to donate back. So it's often on discount. Got things on gardening. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, you it's not just informing people of the problem. I mean, it's filled all the way through with solutions, and there's solutions that even little kids, you know, children can be a part of, and they can do some, you know, and that's, so there's a call to action is what I'm saying. Yeah, there's definitely a call to action. And I think that's
hey,
what
yeah,
makes this book really
something
effective.
Something amazing I see with more and more kids, young kids, is like when they have a birthday party now, they want to get donations to give to charities, and I'd recommend you could do that too in the book, because during your birthday, just ask for donations to like a local food bank or cash to give or things like that. But you see that a lot with just various charities from kids now, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'll have to add that in. My usual policy at my birthdays is donations of bourbon, but I'll have
yep.
to expand that next summer in honor of you.
Yeah. Gotta help all the bourbon insecure bourbon
right.
people here.
Insecure bourbon, right? That's that can be read a number of ways, but all joking aside, though, I mean, this is a fantastic book, and I do hope folks think about, if you know, even if you don't have children, think about gifting one to a niece, nephew, somebody in your realm, a kid as a neighbor. Gift one of these, even if it's not something.
And it really is. It's wonderfully illustrated. It really is. Both books they're tremendous artists. Like, I can't say enough good things about these artists. They really are. They're phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Since you did mention that next book, which should be live any moment, the one we just spoke about is available on Amazon in print, and you can get that like right now and right away. It'll definitely easily make it in time for Christmas. So will the other one as soon as it appears, and that should be just imminently. Amazon's taking a little bit of sweet time here, but this one is another interesting topic. It's one that's part of the talk about it in the public, but this is again addressed to children, and it's a delicate subject that Vic really tackles well. And this one does have a different illustrator, Chloe Elizabeth Green. This is Real Men Don't Need Big Muscles: Explaining Masculinity. It's a same size book, or it is the same size book as the other one. Full color illustrations, nice 8x10 type layout, and they've got just really, really good illustrations that fit, just perfect with the text again. Tell us a little bit about this one and how you picked the topic and how you approached it. Cause yeah, this got a lot of nuance to it. This mm-hmm. one does.
I think this topic especially will be really interesting to parents, because I don't know if I've ever seen anything talking about masculinity in general. So I think a lot of women will be really relieved to have a book like this to go over with their son. It's good for daughters too. But I think it's a topic I rarely see being talked about. And it interested me when I was in graduate school. I wrote my dissertation on factors that influence the use of steroids. And mm-hmm. a lot of that, I had to mention that, a lot of times that muscularity does not equal masculinity. And
right.
A lot of men definitely have that in their head. It's equivalent, I would say, to the phenomenon kind of with Barbie and women. Basically, like men, like the figure, Barbie's doll dimensions are not realistic at all. If that was a real woman, it was like she wouldn't be able to take a step. She would fall forward on her face, flat on her face, if
right.
she was a real person. And then with males, it's kind of the opposite side, to where a lot of young boys think men are just ridiculously muscular, like something that's not even physically achievable is what they envision, like, the ideal man to look like. And in the beginning of the book, there's a boy who gets in a fight at school, and his dad starts talking to him and is like, "Why did you get in a fight?" And he says, "I'm a man, you know." And so basically over the course of the book, the father is asking the son, "What do you think is masculine?" And that's where we try to knock out these stereotypes and things like that. But
right.
the first thing they do is they kind of at first don't feel like talking. And this is some stuff I've learned over my course of education. If you want to talk to a young boy or a man, pretty much any male, you can't let them know your primary activity is, "Hey, we want to talk." That's the first thing that they'll be like, "Oh, no, no." You need to engage in an activity, something like, you always hear about the guy and his dad, they go fishing, and that's when they talk about the world and things like that. What I had here in my book is they start playing video games. And in certain video games, especially like combat games, you can take your fighter and develop their profile or what their appearance and things like
yep.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And he notices that his son just tacks on a bunch of muscle to his character, and that's when they start to get into talk, like, "Son, the same thing, muscularity doesn't equal masculinity," and that sort of thing. There was a professor at Harvard who does something more detailed named Dr. Harrison Pope, and he has this computer program called the Somatomorphic Matrix, and he would bring in middle school-aged boys, high school boys, and they would come, and he'd say, "What does your ideal male figure look like?" And they would typically tack on about 30 pounds extra of muscle than the average male, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my way of kind of doing the same thing, but you could just use something that's probably available to a lot of people, just, if you have a home gaming system and get engaged and being able to talk. and find out your you know, son or even daughter's perception of masculinity.
Yeah, so it starts with the perception of everybody is built like Thor, driving a monster pickup truck and eating a carnivore diet.
Yeah.
Yeah, something,
and having
something
a,
like
having
that.
Having a beard. Having a big,
huge beard.
Big beard.
Right. Huge beard.
Yep.
Well, I don't have problems because it took me almost 50 years to grow a full beard. I don't know why, but during the COVID year, I finally got the sides finally decided to fill in for whatever reason. But so it took me an age to get a beard. But so yeah, I had to figure out what being masculine was a lot earlier without the ability to grow a beard. So. but that aside, it's very interesting how you broke it down. Holly, why don't you comment a little bit about that? This one was has a little more text heavy because there's a lot of nuance to the father and what he says to the son, and kind of how they get into some things about topics like cooking and even sewing and child care. I mean, there's some really interesting insights and a little bit more on the text side. So yeah, Holly, I'd love to hear your thoughts as an editor going through it.
Well, and you know my thoughts on the subject to begin with. I'll touch on that first, is the fact, you know, especially my son Noah, I raised him to be pro-women, you know, pro-women's rights, and, you know, because I'm a very matriarch. I mean, anybody knows me knows I'm a matriarch to my bones. And you know, me and Stephen butt heads, but I'm stubborn as a mule. But, yes, In a healthy way.
Not literally.
In a healthy
just
way.
Just to point that up.
No,
yeah,
God,
in a healthy,
no. In a healthy way.
Yeah, we don't headbutt each other. Yeah, don't.
We have butt bantering.
We can't get that rumor. We're not getting that rumor started, but, yeah.
Well, I think people know darn well, if they know me, that's not happening. But, I taught my son Noah, you know, to cry. You know, if you need to cry, you cry. It's okay to show that emotion. You know, don't feel like you have to bottle it in just because you're a boy. That has nothing to do with it. You're a human. You're a human being, you know, and humans cry. They show emotion. We have emotion. Whether you're a boy or girl, you still have emotion. Doesn't matter, you know, what you're assigned to birth. It doesn't matter. You're still an emotional human being. So you can show it, and human beings all deserve the same rights, the same liberties. You know, if a big girl, I am not a girly girl. I've always been a tomboy. I had a big truck when me and Steve first met. I had a big old 4x4 Silverado, running, you know, what people might say a masculine truck. And that's okay. And, you know, and it's the same with the opposite. If a guy wants to drive a pink Ferrari, then that's fine too. You know, we've got to stop these stereotypical things going on, especially with these boys, because they have felt, you know, for so long that they've had to pin all these different things up and they can't act a certain way because it won't make them a man. It'll make them less of a man, and people think that they're a girl, and, you know, and it's just silly. And that's not the case. And I believe everyone needs to know how to sew a button on, or, you know, how to balance a checkbook, or how to change a tire. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a boy or girl. These things should, you know, it should be taught in school. They used to teach, like, the girls' home ec and the boys, you know, what was it, shop class,
Wood shop.
You know, and know me, I would have rather went to woodshop because that's just who I was. And no, I believe they need to bring some of that back, but it needs to be available to boys and girls. It shouldn't matter. Or those unassigned now, you know, it should be available to everybody because those are skills everyone needs to know. So I think that's why Vic's book is so important. So, you know, we can get rid of this generational toxic masculinity that does exist. I know a lot of people don't want to believe it does, but it truly does exist in our older generations, and it was a different time. It was a different, you know, era, and that things were done different. Society was different. The cultures were different. You know, everything is changing. Everything is evolving in time, and you kind of got to roll with things. And, you know, and I know us older people, we're getting there. We're middle-aged now. I am. But, yeah, I'm telling my age. But we've got, you know, we're in that transitional period, and we've seen, you know, like the younger generation, like my grandkids, I've seen how much different they are than my adult children, you know, with the thoughts and their attitudes toward different things. But, yeah, that's why I think Vic's book, and again, this one will stand the test of time, because it's showing boys that just because you're a boy doesn't mean that you cannot show that emotion. Be who you want to be. Be a great father. Nurture your children. Love on your children. Feed your children. Change your children. That isn't just your wife's responsibility when you grow up. That is also your responsibility to help do the dishes, to help do the housework. You know, that doesn't make you less a man. That makes you a partner, you know, and teaching them these things, it's invaluable.
And bullies. Yeah. He tackles bullies
and
in
bullies.
This too, and that's because
yeah,
no matter what, yeah,
bullies.
The way things are, bullies will in different forms will always be around. I mean, and that's something all kids, you know, a lot of kids are going to encounter. And he's got some insights for that situation and as well, and the ability to apologize when you're wrong, which I think is something that missing in a lot of today's world. But the ability to, yeah, apologize when you're wrong about something,
yeah, we talk about a real man is never afraid to apologize, and it actually tells
right.
you the correct way to apologize. So that's that you identify what you did that was wrong, you know, why it was wrong, what you'll do in the future, and then you actually say, you know, I'm sorry for that. And then you try to compensate in some way for whatever you did wrong, which, you know.
Right.
You know, back when we were younger, a simple, you could just go, I'm sorry, and, you know, that's not, you know, it really didn't help anything.
Right.
It was about, you know, taking responsibility and actually trying to correct what you did that was wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know,
it does mention
that, you know, kids make mistakes. It's okay. Parents forgive their kids for making mistakes. That's what parents do. So.
Oh, yes. I still remember in my childhood when, you know, some kid would pick on somebody or act up, and the teacher would make him apologize, and hear the most insincere apology you've ever heard in your life, and then the next day they'd be right back at it again. So, yeah, definitely. Good insight. And I think the overarching theme that I got, you know, when I got a chance to read the full book is the overarching theme is really there's an undercurrent of self-improvement. And that's that's what kind of resonates throughout the whole thing. I mean, it's about, yeah, developing yourself and, you know, being conscientious and, you know, developing skills, you know, to be, you know, self-sufficient and helpful. In a lot of different areas, like Holly was saying, you know, where you can be a, you know, partner in things. And, yeah, self-improvement, I think, is one of the key themes, I think, that comes out of this. And self-accountability, too. But I think those are very healthy and needed in today's world.
Not one
but, is that a theme that you would agree with on this, or I know you mentioned self improvement, but would you agree with that? It's kind of like the call to action in this or part of it.
No, I definitely agree, and I just see that a lot. It's weird. Like we have all this access to things like YouTube now, and you know, you can basically learn anything, you know, if you searched online and how to do it. But there's so many people I hear like, well, no one set me down and taught me how to do that. You know, back when we were young, we were all latchkey kids. You had to learn everything on your own, and there was no internet to help you. And if you did it wrong, everyone would tell you how stupid you were, and you're like, I just tried this for the first time or whatever. And, I mean, I don't know. I just want people need to be more hands-on, and you just can't expect everything to be handed to you or, you know, you have to make mistakes. You have to learn. That's just how life is. And I just want people, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay to try, you know, you can try. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you try again till you get it right. I mean, that's mentioned in the book too.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's okay to fail. That's one thing, because
yep.
That's something that my dad
yes.
always drilled into me, because he was like, every instance where you quote-unquote fail, you actually, you know, learn a lot that you then take back, you know, when you get yourself up and dust off, that, you know, you come back stronger and more prepared for the next round. And, it's okay to try and fail, yeah. And that's I think that's very important. But really good book. I mean, really good book. And again, the illustrations. Since we gave you a chance to talk about Kevin, now what was it like working with, you know, and it says it's a different illustrator, you know, Chloe. And was the process different? Was the way she, you know, worked with you different? Or how did this process go on these illustrations?
Chloe is the daughter of a good friend of mine that I went to college with, who is she's an exceptional person, and of course her daughter is too. But Chloe came to my attention because her mother had posted some of her artwork on online, and she had won a contest from Google called Doodle Your Google or something. When Google has their homepage and often they'll have like illustrations, Chloe won the contest for all of Florida, I think 2 or 3 years ago. And she has a very unique illustrating kind of style. And she is an amazing artist. Like, she really is. Like, if you see this book, you'll be like, wow, that kid did that in high school? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
they both have a definitive style. I mean, you could tell just mm-hmm. in an instant. I mean, you know, this would be Chloe Elizabeth Green illustration. I mean, she's got a definite style in the way she, you know, does it. Really interesting. The various figures in it. It's just really well done, and it's I'm just scrolling through a few of them right now, and yeah, I mean, she's definitely got a look that fits well with the book. Really does fit well, and just an absolutely good job. And when working on a children's book, I mean, it's very different, obviously, than like working on The Gaze of Ganesh. I mean, you're working with a lot less text, and so, you know, imagine, you know, the challenges of doing a children's book are very different in terms of, yeah, you have to be very you have to be very selective as far as what you put in, because you can't overload it text-wise, have it be like a novel. And you also
yep.
have to be careful about the vocabulary you use so that it, you know, doesn't trip up younger readers. But when you have to shift to writing a children's book, tell us some of the pros, cons, and challenges. What's it like to write a children's book and decide what to put on each of those panels?
Well, what's interesting about writing a children's book is that when you're not on a major publishing press or label, they have access to characters, say, like the Avengers or Clifford or like these mainstream characters, where when you're on more of an independent publisher, you have to think of more of the subject matter of where to kind of hit. Like, what were these gaps and kind of the information, or what kind of do kids need to know kind of thing. So that's why, you know, there's a book on food insecurity and about masculinity, and it's just trying to get a more of a unique perspective because you don't have access to such well-known kind of characters and things like that. But it is interesting because the books I write, the standard format, you're looking at probably ages between 5 and 9 years old. You don't want more than 1,000 words, and you have to have 32 pages. That's just the normal format for a book. It's like you said, you just try not to overwhelm each page with words, but you can get into that 1,000 words pretty fast.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely a different dynamic. it's a different dynamic from definitely writing a novel where you could just write, you can write anything you want, basically, as far as word mm-hmm. count goes, to where the kids' book is so mm-hmm. kind of precise.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, you get used to it though.
But you know, it's real good because you know you like what you know what you need to say, and that's it. Which is kind of good. I mean, it's kind of nice. It's a good exercise for I think for a writer to have to do.
Yeah, I'd say in some ways it probably gets in a little bit into this into the way that you know even like a because it's so intertwined with the artwork. I mean, the artwork is hand in hand with the text in something like this. So it gets a little bit. I mean, I would say almost it gets a little bit into some of the fundamentals of sequential art, like comic books and or graphic novels mm-hmm. and things like that. Because yeah, you really are you have to be conscious of the visual as well as the text as you're telling the. You know, the particular story you're wanting to tell. It's interesting.
Yeah, when I write the information for a page, I have to make sure, like, can someone draw this? You know, like, is this, are you able to visualize this, you know? So I have to definitely be aware of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And, now you've got a nice body because, I mean, you have the girl who grew a sunflower taller than herself, and then you also had helpful tips for kids, which was geared toward, you know, a pandemic situation, and certainly can all a lot of the tips and advice and that can be applied to just general, you know, health, you know, just general health and precaution type mentality on that. So, yeah, there's the stuff in there is still very relevant and today, and especially with now that COVID's part of the fabric of what we get are going to be getting every year with the flu season and everything else. But yeah, so that continues. But yeah, after four books, where do you think you've progressed and learned after four books now out in your collection?
I've got the format down, I think, pretty well now after four. You know, I really like it. Writing them is not so hard. It's really hard for the illustrators because the pictures are so important, you know, for young kids to look at. And you have to keep in mind, I guess a lot of them, they like the physical books compared to the digital.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They love physical.
The tactile feel of the book and everything. But I tried to gear my books towards definitely the parents being able to read with their kids and talk with the kids about the subject matter and just try to open up dialogue maybe that the parents couldn't do on their own, things like that. Like a book I'm looking at to maybe do here soon is called Back in My Day, and it involves parents, grandparents, and kids. So, like, the grandparent will be like, back in my day, I used to listen to records. And the parent is like, back in my day, I used to listen to cassette tapes. And the kids are just like, what? You know, like, everything now they're like, everything's on my phone. Everything, a camera, my scheduler, you know, all that stuff that, you know, that we used to carry around is all on the same device now. And they never have to worry about, like, physical copies you have their information or their media and stuff like that. So it's, you know, just things like that are funny. And then
the Gen Alpha kid walks in the room and goes, and now I like vinyl again. So it comes full circle.
Yep. more vinyl has been sold now than ever before.
Yeah.
Like every year it breaks records.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Cassette tapes
are coming back. Those are big.
Too funny.
And that blows my mind.
Yep.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so and we're coming up. Go ahead, Vic. Go ahead.
I would say another I'm looking at two more books, one about dogs and one about cats, just facts, random facts about each. Because I talked to Holly about this. There's a lot of programs in humane societies where the kids go and read to the animals. So I wanted to design a book for the kids to read to the animals that hopefully if I could get a sponsorship from a pet food company or some other pet wellness company that we could actually just give to the kids when they come in and read, they could take it home. And that way where they're facts, it's like a different, it'll be like 32 facts, a different fact for each page that they don't have to memorize what previously happened to the book. so they can just go page to page and not have to worry about the retention. And then, you know, say like their mom or dad drives them home after they, you know, when they're coming back. If you can just name two or three of those facts, you know, that's like, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like just, I think that would be interesting. But yeah, I've got a few other ones ready, so we'll see.
All right.
If you're a good illustrator, if you're a good illustrator out there looking for a promotion, get a hold of me.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're coming up on just the end of the show here, so I want to give you a chance to give your links and how to connect with you, Vic.
Well, everything should be available on Amazon.com. I have my own personal website. It's under GoDaddy, but if you can just Google search or any major search engine, you can just type in my name, Vitesh, V-I-T-E-S-H, last name Enaker, E-N-A-K-E-R, which last name should probably, it'll all probably come up anyway, but we'll have some more links up on my Facebook page and my personal page. I'll get everything set up here probably in the next day or two. But yeah, I appreciate anyone coming out. That should be great gifts for stocking stuffers, for Christmas, for just for any reason. Should be some good
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Vic. It's been great having you back, and I know you were on not too long ago with the Gaze of Ganesh, but obviously this is a completely different topic and type of book, so it was a lot of fun to talk children's books. But thanks for joining us tonight, and yeah, if you want to just give a final comment, and then Holly, you can take us out.
You want me? Well, yeah, I appreciate you guys having me back. It's always fun. It's great to talk to you both. If I don't talk to you before, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever you do.
Yeah.
And thanks to everybody out there listening. We appreciate you. We all appreciate you, all the people out here listening right now.
Absolutely. Take care, Vic, and I'll be in touch with you tomorrow. I'll be in touch with you tomorrow.
Okay,
Holly.
All right. Thank you to everyone tuning in tonight and in the chat room. You know, we wouldn't do it without you, right? And we love bringing you great programming. And join us next Wednesday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest, another great talk. Happy holidays. And be creative and then make something magical this weekend. Good night, all.